Mr. Cooper, Mr. Cook.
Good morning, Your Honor. We had spoken with the clerk's office this morning. Mr. Cook is here with me. I'm going to take the full 10 minutes.
That's fine.
And my name is William Cott. I'm the attorney for the defendant appellant McDowell. I'm going to be addressing Mr. McDowell's... Mr. McDowell's conviction for conspiracy. We'll rely on our briefs on the various sentencing enhancement arguments we've made. Mr. Cook is here, though, to talk about the drug quantity enhancement. If you have questions, he'll be able to answer those for you. As I said, I'm court-appointed appellate counsel for Mr. McDowell, and we are appealing his conviction under 21 U.S.C. 846. It's important to note that Mr. McDowell did not contest six counts for distribution of heroin. And the reason that's important is there was a lot of evidence right off the top. This appeals about the sufficiency of the evidence on the conspiracy conviction. And there was a lot of evidence, you know, about Mr. McDowell's distribution of heroin. And of course, if a person is a distributor, then they're going to have buyers. And Mr. McDowell had buyers. But the law, you know, as articulated in cases like Johnson and Cologne, is that a buyer-seller relationship is not by itself sufficient evidence of a conspiracy, and that when you have, in particular, circumstantial evidence only, really, and it's equally plausible to conclude from that evidence that there's a buyer-seller relationship as opposed to a conspiracy, that's not enough. That's not sufficient evidence. And so the government did a lot with the distribution facts to suggest smoke about a conspiracy when really it's, you know, buyer-seller evidence that isn't enough to sustain the conspiracy conviction. And there's a couple of specific points worth making about that. One is that to the extent that there's evidence mentioned by the government and really even referred to by the court here about Mr. McDowell's, you know, collaboration with anybody, that collaboration is with an individual, his half-brother, a man named Murray Harris, who is not mentioned in count one of the third superseding indictment that governed the case.
Well, that's true. He's not explicitly named, but the indictment, like most conspiracy indictments, charges that he conspired with named people and others known and unknown to the grand jury. It's a pretty broad catch-all, and it's definitely in the indictment. So the government's not limited to proving the named co-conspirators as co-conspirators, is it?
Well, the focus throughout was on the named co-conspirators, and that's what we think the evidence has to support and that it doesn't here.
It has to support the named conspirators? This allegation about conspired with others known and unknown to the grand jury is just
no, Your Honor.
Agree means nothing.
No, certainly not. But the evidence that's
Mr. McDowell must have had a conspiracy relationship with his brother. His brother was like his shadow or his second arm.
Well, we would disagree with that. He had a, you know, obviously they associated with one another as brothers.
Yeah, but didn't McDowell admit to conspiring with his brother Harris to distribute the heroin to Wassner, the undercover detective?
You mean at the trial?
Yep.
I believe that there was discussion and acknowledgement of their close association. I was not trial counsel, but I don't think that they admitted to a conspiracy. And I don't think that the government has pushed, or that the court decided in, you know, rejecting the motions for judgment of acquittal below, that the relationship with Harris was the basis for those things.
Well, didn't Breedlove's testimony show that McDowell was working with Harris and Harris was working with Cooper and Presley, because McDowell promised to tell Harris to fix the problem when Breedlove had issues with the drugs Harris gave him? McDowell and Harris intervened the next time Breedlove had problems with the drugs. McDowell gave Breedlove a free pack the next next time Harris gave him bad heroin. I mean, those are...
So we think that's evidence supporting the buyer-seller relationship, but that doesn't support the sort of conspiracy-type evidence discussed in the case law. There's not sort of the economic...
Buyer-seller between Harris and McDowell?
No, between McDowell and Breedlove.
But they're two sellers. Mm-hmm. They're McDowell and Harris are selling Breedlove. And to the...
Yes, but again, I guess I would say, Your Honor, that the evidence that...
they're working in tandem.
That the evidence that the court relied on and that that the government's focused on, you know, in their briefing as we're disputing about whether there was sufficient evidence relates to evidence with respect to Breedlove and Presley and Cooper. And you know, there hasn't been a discussion about Mr. Harris and you know their association as brothers and you know members of.
But the family. Wasn't the evidence that McDowell financed the purchase of heroin and provided locations for Harris, Cooper, and Presley to dilute, package, and sell the drugs? And he intervened, as I mentioned earlier, when people had problems with the drugs, and he sold drugs himself in coordination with Harris, Cooper, and Presley.
So the direct evidence of that all comes from grand jury testimony.
Didn't he also rent some vehicles that were used by Cooper and someone else? I can't remember the name.
Yeah, the evidence is that he rented vehicles used by Mr. Cooper. He also had a history of renting vehicles for a woman in the community. I mean, this is not, you know, it's a community where access to credit cards and, frankly, vehicles is not going to be a common thing. So, you know, that's the sort of, you know, that's circumstantial evidence that they knew each other. There's no dispute that he knew who Preston and Cooper were or that they were associates. But we don't think that supports the sufficiency here for the conviction.
But the vehicles show up where drug sales are occurring?
Well, Mr. Cooper was found to have used, I think, two vehicles which were never found themselves with any drugs or anything. But, yeah, I mean, he was using them, so when they were found, you know, when there was stuff found in hotel rooms or whatever near where he had parked those cars, that did happen, yes.
And didn't McDowell tell Wassner's informant that if one of McDowell's distributors were unavailable, he should call one of his others? One of the others on his team?
So the whole his team gloss on this isn't supported by the testimony. That's not what anybody said. All of that stuff comes from the testimony primarily of two people, Freddie Freeman and another witness in front of the grand jury, testimony that the trial court was not really particularly comfortable with, as you can see in the way he deals with that in you know, denying the motions for judgment of acquittal after the government's case and the close of the evidence. You know, that was testimony made, I think, in early January 2011 in front of an impaneled fall 2010 grand jury. Actually, it's not that grand jury that issues the ultimate indictment. It's a subsequent one. And basically, those two witnesses said everything that the government wanted them to say up until it came time for trial and cross-examination. And at that point, one of the witnesses said, you know, no, he wasn't part of anything else. And the other witness repeatedly said...
What were
said
their names? The names?
Dania McDowell said that, no, he wasn't a participant in something like that. And the other, Freddie Freeman, said that repeatedly that he didn't know who Stephen McDowell was.
But Breedlove didn't recant. I mean, Breedlove challenged on cross-examination, but...
That's correct. He didn't recant, but the Breedlove evidence really is all about, you know, Mr. Breedlove repeatedly said, I didn't work for these guys. The government acknowledged that he could do whatever he wanted with the drugs that he was purchasing. So there isn't the, you know, agreement between the two of them for sort of standard quantities over a period of time or where he's got to return some portion to McDowell or where, you know, it's sort of some elaborate financing arrangement of the kind that rises to conspiracy. Breedlove's testimony was, yeah, I bought drugs from this guy. I used a bunch of it. Sometimes I sold it. You know, that doesn't rise to the level of the evidence that's needed here. I see that I'm into my rebuttal time.
Okay.
I reserve
well,
that.
Thank you, Mr. Chief. Mr. Carner?
May it please the Court, my name is Mark Carner. I am an assistant U.S. attorney in Northern District Western Division and prosecuted this case at trial with Mr. John McKenzie. We respectfully request that the court affirm the convictions and sentences of both defendants in this case and assert that the evidence introduced at trial was sufficient to allow a rational trier of fact to find both defendants guilty of conspiring to possess with intent to distribute 1 kilogram or more of heroin. The categories of evidence that we introduced at trial, first of all, did consist of the controlled deliveries first by Norman Breedlove to undercover Detective Wassner, and then shortly thereafter, Wassner was buying directly from Steve Defendant McDowell. Beyond the obvious inference that those controlled buys showed direct evidence of drug trafficking, they say something else. They show that McDowell had the authority to steer high-paying customers away from lower members in the conspiracy like Breedlove to himself. It shows that he had the authority and discretion to negotiate price, quantity, and location of deliveries. He had the authority to determine how the organization's heroin was diluted with Dorman. And then it shows, they also show that he had the ability to insulate himself from the more risky business of physically handing heroin to customers to evolving into the financier, the money man of this organization. Same old shoe with Cooper. He made controlled deliveries to an informant. Those deliveries link him to the Longwood residence of Dania McDowell that was rented by Steve McDowell. They link him to the hotel room where evidence of drug trafficking was located. And they also show that he was a part of the conspiracy and that he disciplined, had the ability, and in one instance did discipline a person who stole heroin from the organization. But what really shows the conspiracy here is the information we got from insiders. Dania McDowell was Defendant McDowell's mother. She, no question about it, on the day of trial flipped on us and really gave no inculpating information at trial. The nuts and bolts of her her evidence come from her grand jury testimony at a time when she either no one got to her or she didn't understand the consequences of her testimony. But she clearly testified in the grand jury on page 6, lines 14 to 25, that her son, Steve McDowell, was partners with Harris, Presley, and Cooper in the drug-selling business. She was in a position to know this because she actually saw Presley, Cooper, and the others cut and package heroin from inside her apartment. That's at page 22, lines 18 to 22 of the grand jury testimony. And she also heard the four co-conspirators talk about their drug business.
So you impeached her with all that, right?
Yes, and that came in as substantive evidence, Your Honor.
That is substantive evidence?
Yes, sir, under 801D2. Mm-hmm. And that was admitted for substantive evidence, and that's mm-hmm. what we argued to the jury.
You say 801D2?
I believe mm-hmm. so, yes.
News prior admissions?
Prior and consistent statement made under oath, Judge.
Right.
She overheard him say, discuss making trips to Chicago, and we learned that from her in the grand jury that his role on page 23, lines 5 through 6 and 19 to 24, that his role was to finance the purchase of heroin. And so when the defense argument that, well, in July, he begged out of the conspiracy when he said he didn't want to touch it. That's not true. That's not supported by the evidence. Because after July, he's driving Murray Harris, his brother, to make the controlled deliveries of heroin. He's negotiating deliveries of heroin with Wassner. And he maintained his involvement all the way through December. So he wasn't getting out of the conspiracy. Willie Hernandez, the informant who introduced Wassner.
Let me go back to it. I'm just puzzled. I can't remember ever seeing a case where grand jury testimony yeah. was introduced as substantive testimony in a criminal case. Maybe I've just been asleep all these years, but is this common?
Judge, when somebody, it's common with me. My caseload.
With some, with somebody, you get flipped on all the time. So right. the whole reason you put them in the grand jury is to get them under oath so when they flip you, the testimony can be admitted as substantive evidence. That's the whole point. Because
exactly.
otherwise, they flip you on the stand, you'd have no weapon. So it's the nature of the testimony under oath, even though there's no opposing counsel there, that makes it admissible according to the rule.
Exactly right. And of course, the witness then is produced at trial and subject to cross-examination. But that's
the
exactly
court didn't credit that testimony for purposes of an amount of drugs. Am I right? I mean, there was some, in terms of how many kilos were involved, the judge had some qualms.
Well, Judge, her testimony didn't, the only thing that she said that touched upon the drug quantity was that she heard conversations between the co-conspirators in which they discussed making trips twice a week to Chicago. She didn't go into numbers, mm-hmm. and in fact, she said her son wasn't hands-on selling it, but he financed it. So we have that. We have Willie Hernandez, who said that he believed that Norman Breedlove was one of four other employees of McDowell who sold heroin, because if one runner was unavailable or didn't have a stash of heroin to sell, McDowell referred him to another runner. Vaughn Johnson corroborated Dania McDowell, the defendant's mother, in describing all four men as selling drugs from the premises from Longwood. We had Rodney Love, who testified at trial and before the grand jury. And he said that he knew McDowell had sold drugs for more than a year. And then, and consistent with our theory that he evolved from a hands-on dealer to a financier, that McDowell sold drugs for more than a year and that he started selling by himself and then had people working for him. That's at the trial transcript at 997. She talked about Cooper and Presley bringing young men to... I'm sorry, Rodney Love said that he described Presley and Cooper bringing young men to Longwood to sell heroin, and that they were supplied, these young men were supplied the drugs by Presley and Cooper. In the grand jury, he also had to be impeached a little bit, but he admitted in the grand jury that as McDowell got bigger, he had more people working for him, or he hired people to work for him in the summer of 2010. And then McDowell, Cooper, and the others used Dania McDowell's apartment to cut, bag, and sell heroin. And then, of course, there's the witness, and his name's Frank Freeman, not Fred Freeman. he flipped on us at trial, too. and we used his grand jury and admitted it was his grand jury. And he plainly said that he spoke to Steve in negotiating the rental of his home, and that Steve McDowell paid $100 a day to rent that home, and that he had learned that Presley made trips two times a week to obtain 50 grams of raw heroin per trip, and then brought that raw heroin to the Longwood residence where it was cut. Breedlove's testimony is consistent with that. He was not a mere customer. If he was a mere customer, he had no incentive to refer Wassner, this big money customer, to Steve McDowell. If he was purely a customer of the organization's, why wouldn't he have kept Wassner to himself? And capitalize on that relationship.
Well, when you become a conspirator, suppose you're a customer for a drug and you want to ingratiate yourself with your supplier, so you say, you know, there's another person you could sell to who's rich and buy all your stuff. And the customer does this in the hope that he'll get a lower price from his supplier in gratitude. Would that make the customer a conspirator?
Probably not, Judge. The difference, of course, here between your hypothetical and the facts here is that there's no evidence that Breedlove ever tried to use Wassner's introduction or referral as a way to get a more beneficial deal on the heroin. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, unless the court has any other questions of me, I'll respectfully sit down and request that the court affirm the convictions and sentences of the defendants.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Farner. Mr. Cook, anything further? How much time does he have?
I just have three very quick points. The first is that the reason that grand jury testimony, of course, is admissible is because there's going to be eventually, finally, the opportunity for cross at trial. And when the trial testimony happened and the cross-examination happened, they said nothing of the kind that they did in front of the grand jury. They, you know, Freeman said he didn't know who McDowell was. He couldn't identify him in court. And Ms. McDowell, if you look at that grand jury transcript, it's not really all that clear. She's talking about, yeah, so-and-so know people, and I heard them talk about this, but it's not clear that they're doing all this stuff together. So I mentioned that. The other thing is...
of course, the jury heard all that, heard that cross-examination, heard the sequence of events.
Yes, they did. Sure, mm-hmm. Certainly they did. And in terms of the, you know, the confidential informants and the detective, they didn't offer any testimony about, in particular, about any relationship with Presley or Cooper on any drug-related basis. You notice that Mr. Carner didn't say anything really about Harris as being the key to this thing. That wasn't the way that this was put together and tried. And, you know, I just want to note Judge Posner's point about the fact that you refer somebody. I mean, the detective was posing as a buyer of a large quantity of drugs, something that I don't think Mr. Breedlove could have even supplied had he wanted to do it. There's a whole bunch of reasons other than being a conspirator and having an agreement with somebody that you might make that sort of referral. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Cook. And you were appointed, were you not?
Yes.
So we thank you for your efforts on behalf of your client. And, of course, we thank other counsel as well. So our next case for argument, Ben Mendoza.